Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday morning. Yeah, it's feeling like a Monday, but yeah, short work week. September 8th, 51 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. We've got 50 degrees in the Heber Valley under mostly sunny skies. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Tuesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're going to be looking at mostly sunny skies expected for us today. More pleasant weather conditions expected across the area. As we see those temperatures climbing into the mid-70s for high temperatures in the Park City area. We'll see those highs climbing into the low 80s in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into your Wednesday hump day, well, we're looking at lots of sunshine expected across the Wasatch Back once again. High temperatures a few degrees warmer, but still not too bad. Upper 70s for highs in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures climbing into the mid-80s in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into your Thursday, we're going to be looking at partly sunny skies out there. Overall, I'm thinking it's going to remain on the dry side, just a few extra clouds. Temperatures climbing to around 80 degrees in Park City. We'll be in the mid-80s for highs in the Heber Valley. Once we make our way to Friday, well, I'll tell you what, Friday is going to feature a mixture of clouds and sunshine, but we're going to introduce a chance of an isolated thunderstorm or two. Doesn't look like a big rain event, but there is a chance of an isolated storm or two sneaking by. Temperatures will be still remaining in the mid-70s for us in Park City. We'll be in the low 80s for highs in the Heber Valley. Now, as we go into your Saturday, that's going to be our changeable weather day. I do think an approaching trough will come in from the north and west. That will not have a lot of moisture to work with, but it should have enough to kick off a few isolated showers and thunderstorms on your Saturday. Again, not expecting a washout or major rainfall as we go throughout the weekend, but there will be a few isolated showers and storms. Park City will see those highs in the mid-70s. We'll be in the low 80s in the Heber Valley. Behind that little weak system, that's when some cool air begins to flow in. We'll return those temperatures back down into the 40s for morning lows, and we'll have high temperatures as we move into your Sunday, only in the mid-60s over towards Park City. We'll be in the mid-70s in the Heber Valley, and we'll have highs around 70 for your Monday in Park City with highs in the mid-70s in the Heber Valley. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with Summit County Library Director Dan Compton. He'll have an update on the new Kimball Junction Library branch. Park City Education Foundation CEO Ingrid Whitley and the new Managing Director of Advancement, Carrie Bedell, with a look at the organization's 40th anniversary and Build the Family launch. And finally, from Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang with a preview of her trip to a film festival, as well as some of the upcoming screenings we can look forward to at the Jim Santee Auditorium. Taking a look now at some local news, Wasatch County residents are now waiting for a decision from the state's highest court on the future of the Heber Valley Temple. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has this report.
Bruce Van Dusen has been waiting nearly 3 years to find out whether he'll have the Heber Valley Temple for a neighbor. He and a few other Red Ledges residents sued Wasatch County over plans for the building, whose steeple will stretch 210 feet into the sky. Standing outside the Utah Supreme Court Friday, Van Dusen said it's been a lesson in patience to follow the lawsuit through.
So we're just asking that the same rules apply to everyone, and we're asking that zoning rules and general plans, which counties have put great thought into, are adhered to.
In fall 2023, Wasatch County cleared the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to construct the temple east of downtown Heber. The 4th District Court lawsuit followed close behind, and the church joined the lawsuit as a defendant in January 2024. Attorneys from all three sides made their cases Friday to the Supreme Court, where the arguments largely turned on technical details of state land use law. Red Ledges residents argue Wasatch County has misused its land use authority. They say they'll be harmed if the temple goes forward due to added traffic, noise and light pollution, and obstructed mountain views. Their attorney, Robert Mansfield, says the county has the right to legislate, but not to disregard other portions of the state's County Land Use, Development and Management Act, or CLEDMA.
If you're giving a county carte blanche authority to go in and do any sort of land use regulation at once without the possibility of any real review, then why even have CLEDMA?
But David Jordan, representing the church, said the law gives the county the right to do exactly what it did.
They say, well, you changed the zoning code. No, there's no change to the zoning code. They exercised their authority to adopt a regulation which would otherwise be inconsistent or prohibited by the zoning code, the general plan, any of those things. And that's the beauty of the authority given to the county under CLEDMA.
The county agrees and contends residents don't meet the legal standards to bring a lawsuit over the temple approval. Deputy County Attorney John Woodard said the problems they may face are inherent to growth.
We don't believe that there's an injury here. We think that the problems that have been alleged are exaggerated, and they're the sort of issues that we'd have in any development.
Justices took the matter under advisement after about 90 minutes of arguments and questions. It's not immediately clear when the panel will issue a decision. There's no deadline for them to do so. The Supreme Court could uphold the district court's ruling and side with Wasatch County. If it overturns the lower court's opinion, Mansfield says the case will return to a fourth district judge for further action. The temple will be 88,000 square feet with a 210-foot steeple. The Supreme Court previously ruled that construction can continue during the lawsuit, and site work is underway. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, the Kimball branch of the Summit County Library has closed to make the move to its new location, the Peak Center. In the studio with an update on how that's going, I have Summit County Library Director Dan Compton. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
So you haven't moved out at this point?
No, but we will be very soon, this week, hopefully. So.
Okay, so what's happening at the new Peak Center?
So they're finishing up the construction on the library side, and then they're still working on the second floor as well, because I think folks are going to be moving in there hopefully early next year. So when the library is done, there will still be construction in the building. They're also finishing up the auditorium area. So we're trying to be patient, but we are ready to go. Like, we've got everything packed and ready, and we're actually going to be loading up a trailer later this afternoon. So, yeah.
Okay.
It's happening.
And so is that the staff's job then, is to put all of the books back?
We've hired some help to help us. We've been the ones packing the books and getting everything ready, and now we've got some help coming today to help us actually move boxes. So.
Okay. You had let people check out as many as 50 books.
Yes.
Was that helpful? Did it work?
It was so helpful, actually. I'm very impressed with the response that we got from the community on that. We ended up getting, so we ran that promotion called Check Out the Move for 2 weeks. We had 15,000 books checked out in that time period, which equates to about 35% of our entire collection at that branch. So it was huge, and to not have to pack up 15,000 more items is such a blessing, because it is a ton of work.
Yeah.
To get everything organized, and just so that when those boxes do move over, we know where they go. It's just a ton of work, and we appreciate the community's support and patience during this time.
Yeah, so given that, though, I mean, how do you put the books back on the shelf not knowing all of the other books that are coming back to fill in the space?
So that's a great question. So we did end up with some shelves that were empty, and so we have to account for those. So when we're putting the books in the new location, we have a very clear labeling system that will say, like, okay, this shelf is actually empty, because we know that all these books are going to be coming back eventually. So we're going to space it out. So it should work pretty smoothly, hopefully.
Okay. At any given time, I mean, how much of the collection is checked out?
It's definitely not that much, I would say. I mean, that was extreme. And you could walk in the Kimball Junction branch right before we close, and you could sense, like, something's a little off here. It looks very empty. But there were still about 27,000 to 30,000 items that we've had to pack up. So even with all that help, it's still a ton of work.
Okay, so what's been the most challenging part of the move? Maybe you don't know, because it might be just restarting up again, huh, under new systems? And
I think there's just so many moving parts with this, because not only we're not just moving books, we're also having to set up computers and get all the tech running, and we're going to have to move our server over, and just getting everything functioning again like it did. It just does require a lot of different vendors and moving parts and coordinating all that, and especially when the construction has taken longer than expected, and just trying to be patient and work with the team there to make it all come together at the right time. That's been the biggest challenge for me.
Yeah, and you've got two other libraries, and the bookmobile, but this is, I'm sure, just kind of sucking all your time. So those others are just running on their with managers there.
Yeah, and what we've done is we understand, being closed is tough and for the public, and so we've had the bookmobile actually parked at the Kimball Junction branch for the past couple of weeks, and this week it's we've actually extended the hours just a little bit, so people can actually go and pick up their holds there if they did have them normally delivered to the Kimball Junction branch. We have them available. So today from 8 to 5, as well as Wednesday and Thursday from 8 to 5, and then on Friday from 10 to 5, you can go visit the bookmobile. You can browse the collection on the bookmobile and then also pick up holds. We also, if we're getting items that are newer that are being returned to us, we're just putting them out there. So you can still find a new book or movie or whatever on the bookmobile right now.
Yeah. The Summit County Council toured the space last week. What comments did they have to say?
I got to go with them on that, and I think everybody's just really, really excited about this, because especially on the library side, they were impressed with how it looks and how spacious it is. The things that I'm most excited about that I shared with them is just the ability for us to now have some conference rooms and study rooms available in the actual library that the library can have control over and reserve to the public. So excited about that. We've had some fun even naming those, and we should get some really cool signs for them. So the three conference rooms, we gave some literary names. So we have 221B, a little nod to Sherlock Holmes and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. We have the Shire, and then we have Pemberley. So those are your three conference rooms. And then we have four study rooms that have tree names, because you'll notice as you go in this building, the carpet colors and everything, it definitely has a tree type theme. So aspen, oak, poplar, and spruce are the conference rooms. And then we have this really amazing children's room, and we're going to call it the Acorn Room. And it's so cute. And it's just a place where kids can come in, and we're going to do our story times in there. We're going to have crafts in there. There's even a little kid-sized door to get into the room in addition to a regular door. It's just a really fun, whimsical type space that we're very excited about.
So how much larger is this library compared to what we had?
So the library at the Richens building right now is about 8,000 square feet, and just the Richens building is about 17,000, and I think Peak Center is about two of those combined. But for library space, just in the library proper, it's about 10,500 square feet. And then that's not including this lobby area that we all have access to that almost feels like an extension of the library. And then the large auditorium, and it just feels so much bigger. And even when you just go into the library, you can just tell. And I love how it's more, the areas are kind of more separated than they used to be. The Richens building, it's just one big giant room. Now you do feel like you're going into a children's area and it's separated. We have a computer lab space, and each area just feels like its own space now. And I'm excited about that too.
Yeah, it seems like the building's got lots of windows. Does that create a challenge for preserving books?
Not for us. We're not housing really old books that need to be cared for in that way. So for us, it's totally fine. And it's really nice to have all that natural light coming in. And I think the public will love sitting in comfortable seats, looking out at the Olympic Park, places to study there. It's a beautiful, beautiful space.
Okay. So you had to get all new furniture as well.
We are, and it was time. We rode that furniture at the at the Richens building for 25 years and everything. So, it was time for an upgrade, and the public deserves it.
Okay. And, moving an entire library collection is huge. So we've talked about the books, but you've got other materials, right? I mean, DVDs and magazines and...
Right. And even our library of things are, some games and awkward shaped items. Everything is packed and ready to go, and I'm excited. After I'm done here, I'm heading over, and we're going to be prepping to start loading a trailer today. So
All right. And so for those books that are checked out, the 35%, when can patrons start bringing those back in?
So during the Check Out the Move promotion, we extended people's due date into October. And we actually would appreciate if people just wait till October to bring those back. Or whenever we are going to do our soft opening, and I'm sorry, I can't give an exact date for that today. We're shooting for, you know, in the next couple of weeks to just do a soft opening. If we're open, feel free to bring them back. But if you could hang on to them until we're in the new location, that was the whole point of this, is you're essentially helping us move by just hanging on to those items till we're in the new space and bringing them back there instead of bringing them back to the current location.
Okay. And will you need to bring on additional staff when those books start to come back in, or do you think the current staff can handle that?
Well, we'll be able to handle it, you know. We'll just, if we have to take our time, we'll take our time. And we've got a huge workspace now in the back of house area. And if we just have to be loading books on carts, and we'll shelve them when we can get to them.
Okay. So. And then do patrons need to do anything different with their library card, or the library card will work in the new system?
Oh, yeah. Current library cards will work just fine.
Okay. And I know the Park City Friends of the Library were very happy to take your donations. When will you start accepting those again?
Yeah, I think as soon as we get settled in, we'll turn that back on and allow that to happen. So, and the Friends of the Library, Summit County Library, will have a display area in the new building where they can have an ongoing sale space. And then we'll also have some storage space for them to keep some books for a bigger sale.
Okay. And again, if patrons need a book, they've got a hold waiting, you say this week they can pick it up?
Well, yeah, we've had the bookmobile hours, but we just extended them a little bit. It used to be 8 to noon each day, and now we're going 8 to 5 Monday through Thursday, and then 10 to 5 on Friday.
Okay. Not just this week, into the future as well?
Yeah, if we need to do it next week, we'll do the same thing, I think. So just to give, we understand, like, people need to pick up their stuff, and sometimes they show up and don't understand what's going on, and so it still gives them an option to be able to browse books, especially if they bring their kids. They can still get some items to check out.
Okay. Anything else going on at the other libraries that you want to let people know about?
Oh, we're just starting with our, like, regular fall programming now. So we're back to, you know, summer reading's now over, and we're getting back into, like, having our story times for different age groups. Like, we have the babies, the toddlers, and preschoolers, and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, if you just check our website, there's just usually always something going on every day at every branch, it feels like. So there's plenty of activities.
Okay. Dan, anything else you want to mention?
I guess one more thing would be the county is planning a grand opening for Saturday, October 3rd, and we are going to do a symbolic Brook Brigade that day for anyone who would like to show up. So from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., that's when the event will be, with the Book Brigade happening at about 1 p.m. And so we're going to look for as many volunteers as we can get to line up from the Richens Building down to the Peak Center. And we're planning to move the 24 books that we have selected for One Book, One Community over the years, back since 2003, I want to say. And the last one being Go As a River, this year's selection by Shelley Reed. And we plan to film this and have, like, a GoPro going and also a drone. And I actually think it's going to look really cool to have the book Go As a River as the last one moving down, like, a river of people, and with a drone filming that. It could look really amazing. So please, if that interests anyone in the community, share that. October 3rd at around 1 p.m., we'd love to have you there participating. It will definitely be a historic occasion that you'll remember for a long time.
Okay, well, that's earlier than I thought. When you talked October, I was pushing it way back. So that's great.
So we better be open. We better be open by October 3rd.
Yeah. I did have one other question. For those coming from the Park City side of things, making that, you can't make a left turn into the library. Will that ever change?
Ooh.
I
don't have that information. Okay. If there are plans, especially with the development happening, I don't know if they plan to change that. But yes, currently, you would have to go to the roundabout and flip around. Yep. And that is an inconvenience for sure, but I do not know if there are plans to change that currently.
Okay. All right. Dan Compton, Summit County Library Director. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, with the start of school, the Park City Education also planning ahead for the upcoming school year. And in studio with an update, I have CEO Ingrid Whitley, along with the new Managing Director of Advancement, Carrie Bedell, good morning to both of you. Thanks.
Hi, Leslie. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Carrie, we need to, there you go. I'm going to start with you, Carrie, just because you've been hired to replace once Jen Bello retired. Maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself and why you are interested in working for the Ed Foundation.
Well, great. Thanks, Leslie. Actually, I joined the Park City Ed Foundation almost nearly 2 years ago now. Yes, I am charged with driving philanthropic support and spreading the word about the work Park City Ed Foundation does to fund educator-powered initiatives across our six public schools. Prior to that, I was with independent schools in the state of Utah, and it was exciting to learn about the work the Ed Foundation does to support our teachers and students here in Park City.
Okay, so your job duties have changed from what you were doing before, and you've, Ingrid, you've replaced what she was doing?
Yeah, so Carrie primarily was leading our charge with our endowment campaign, which is exciting, coming to a close here in the next few months. We're gonna be celebrating that in the winter. And so Carrie's, yes, her responsibilities have shifted. We've also been really fortunate to add a couple new staff to support with our marketing work and our annual fund campaign, which launches today, Build the Foundation.
So, okay,
yeah.
Great, we'll talk a little bit about more about that. I mean, have you seen this as an opportunity with the retirement of Jen to kind of do things a little bit differently?
You know, Jen is a force to be reckoned with, and she was on our team for 15 years and led the organization in its fundraising work so well, and so also grew with the organization over 15 years. And we grew from, you know, when she joined raising, I think it was, she said $50,000 a year all the way up to $2 million, so a huge growth in a number of years. And that also led to her having a lot of institutional knowledge and kind of building the campaigns and the work that she was doing. And so we took the opportunity to, think about a different structure. And we're so grateful to have Carrie. And we've stayed in very close contact with Jen. Really appreciate all the work she did over the last many years.
Great. Well, as I mentioned, this is the 40th anniversary of the Ed Foundation. Anything planned for a celebration?
Well, we marched in the Miners' Day Parade yesterday, which was our first time doing that in a decade, which was super fun. And then today, yes, we launch our Build the Foundation campaign, which is our annual family appeal campaign to support our six schools. We ask all of our families to consider a gift of any amount, and then we have some prizes and awards for participation to celebrate the amazing support from across our six schools.
Yeah, I just want to take a look back at the history, and I know, of course, Ingrid, you weren't here, but do you have any idea about how things did happen back in 1986? I mean, was there a classroom grant or something that was?
Yeah, so we started, I think it was a lot of parents who cared a lot about our public schools came together to fund a grant, a $2,000 grant for a student to attend Stanford Space Camp, I think it was. And actually, Carrie and I have been really fortunate and grateful to meet with a couple of the original board members. Dr. Winnie, I think he's a longstanding community member. We've had great conversations with him. Carla Kunrat, also still local in the community. So they shared a little bit about their history in the beginning of the organization with us. And it's just amazing how, again, their vision for this organization has taken root and grown and flourished over the last 40 years, and we're excited to continue to take that baton forward.
Yeah, and talk a little bit about just why the Education Foundation was formed in the first place.
Yeah, I think, part of the reason is because so much of our local tax dollars are recaptured by the state. So this year we're sending $266 million in income and property taxes collected here in Summit County back to the state to get redistributed across other school districts. And so they saw a need and how can we keep local money local? And so through philanthropy, and that's where kind of the genesis of the Ed Foundation started.
Okay, and you do pretty well. I mean, like you say, you're hoping to contribute like $1.8 million, into our local education this year. Any idea what that was like 40 years ago?
I think it was that one $2,000 grant, right? So that was the first kind of fundraising effort, and it's grown from there. You know, when I was looking back at some old newspaper articles from the last 30-year anniversary, and they were doing amazing fundraising work, and I think they were excited that they had hit, I don't know, maybe $1 million in fundraising. So it's, you know, we've really scaled the organization over the last 40 years.
Okay. So Carrie, as Ingrid mentioned, you're launching the Build the Foundation Family Appeal. Does this kind of replace the Answer the Call campaign that you used to do beginning of the year?
My understanding, yes, the Beat the Call campaign. Yes. So this was more about reframing it so that everyone knows what they're investing in, right? Rather than the pressure of beating a phone call, which is important, and I understand that. But let's talk about what our gifts directly support to make our education exceptional here in Park City. And all those programs that the students love going home about and talking about, whether it's from their arts class to their STEM to culinary arts to aviation, what resources our teachers identify that they need in their classrooms. And this year so far, we've had some recent requests from teachers who they wanted to fund a live bearded dragon habitat to some math tools, math manipulatives for kindergartners, for some hands-on learning, and wobble chairs for students who just need a little help with that focus during class time. All great things that the educators have identified would help their students learn.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about how a family can contribute. And maybe, Ingrid, you can first just address the fact that, more than half of our property taxes go to education, again, state and local, and then a lot of the local gets taken away.
Yeah.
But, why would a family want to continue to contribute?
Yeah, it's a great question. Most of our local property taxes also get recaptured. So we're doing great, right? We're meeting the basics. We have beautiful school buildings and incredible teachers. And we have a bigger vision for what education in our community should look like. And so I think as we talk with parents about what they want for their students, and also as we think about the gaps that still persist between students who are coming from low socioeconomic status backgrounds and students from higher income backgrounds, we want to work to close those gaps academically. And so there's still work we can do as an education foundation and as a school district to make that happen.
Okay, so how can a family contribute, Carrie?
We ask that families, today, actually, as they're pulling in to drop their students off on campus, there'll be parent volunteers there talking about Build the Foundation. They can go right online and give at PCF, the number 4, kids, and contribute there. But also, all of the students have or will be receiving envelopes that they can send back to school, because there's also some grade level encouragement for students to give. And so there will be popsicle parties at the elementary and middle schools for the grade with the highest participation. And then at the high school, there'll be drawings for lunch and those coveted parking passes for those grades with the highest participation.
Okay, and that's just kind of a percentage of the student body?
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, and the goal for the campaign is what?
Our hope is to raise $180,000 this year, which is kind of consistent with what we've been able to do in this campaign over the last several years. And then I also just wanted to mention we have a really generous grant that we're able to give from the UPS Stores Park City to the to any school that reaches a certain threshold, so 40% of families participating or raising $40,000, we give a $2,500 grant back to the school's PTO or PTA. And if schools reach 70% participation or $50,000, we also give a $5,000 grant. So lots of incentives there for schools to participate.
Okay. The campaign runs through when?
Next Friday, September
18th. September 18th.
Yeah.
So you'll wrap it up by then.
Yes.
Okay. So
it's a quick campaign.
Yeah, people need to act.
Yes.
And then what about will there be some kind of 40th anniversary celebration planned later in the year?
Well, we're going to be celebrating our 40th anniversary at our Red Apple Gala this November 14th. Tickets are and tables are still on sale. Please go and buy them if you're interested in coming. We'd love to have a really full room to celebrate our 40th anniversary. And then we'll also be doing a few other things throughout the year. So stay tuned, join our newsletter, go to our website. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I don't think so, other than just thank you to the community for all of your support. Thanks to our educators. It's, you know, we're off to the races of a school, and it's been a really fun year already, and our students. And we just appreciate all of our families for their support during this campaign. So thank you.
Okay, and it just kind of feels like the school year is now in effect after Labor Day, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. We are
exactly
there.
Okay, that is the CEO of Park City Education Foundation, Ingrid Whitley, and the Managing Director of Advancement, Carrie Bedell. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
Well, in a split vote, the Summit County Council last week approved a new ordinance changing its rezoning process. KPCW's Christine Neller reports the ordinance is meant to reduce government bureaucracy, but opponents worry it may make rezoning too easy.
Summit County Council members approved Ordinance 1016 in a split 3-2 vote Wednesday. The ordinance requires less detail from developers up front when they're asking to change what's allowed on unincorporated Snyderville Basin land. The new process would still require the county and a landowner to agree on building heights, density, layouts, and other aspects of a project. Community Development Director Peter Barnes said before, a rezone required substantial engineering drawings and documentation, resulting in wasted time, effort, and money.
It should reduce government bureaucracy. It will reduce the number of times that staff are required to review abortive work.
Barnes also said the ordinance will make the process more transparent. He said the changes will likely mean more rezone applications, but decisions will be made sooner, including negative recommendations.
In setting the expectation with the applicant, setting the expectation with the public and with the bodies that review the project, I think that's transparency in and of itself.
The ordinance became controversial last month as community members and council members raised concerns that rezoning would become too easy. Council Vice Chair Roger Armstrong worried the change would remove opportunities for public comment.
Zoning is and should be one of the hardest things we do. It is the vision of what this community should look like, based on the people that elect us to be here, based on the number of interviews that we do, the public input that we get to create the zones that we create.
Armstrong and Council Chair Candace Hart voted against the ordinance. Council Member Megan McKenna, however, liked that the changes are backed by the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission and that it will help them bring rezones to the public sooner. The ordinance proposal was spurred in part by Columbus Pacific Development's Crossroads at Silver Creek project. The proposal went back and forth for 4 years before the Planning Commission gave it the thumbs up in July. Council members finally approved a rezone for the project Wednesday from rural residential to community commercial. The Crossroads project includes 90 housing units with a park and clubhouse, a 4,000-square-foot nonprofit building, and 32,000 square feet of commercial space. The new rezone rules may facilitate another Columbus Pacific project a few miles away on the Klein Dolly property in Jeremy Ranch. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
On the phone now with an update from Park City Film, I have Executive Director Katie Wang. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I think you are on your way to a film festival this week.
I'm actually between film festivals. Okay. I just came back from the Telluride Film Festival over Labor Day weekend, and then I'm headed off to Toronto tomorrow, actually, for another week of movie watching.
Okay. So I guess how soon is it that we get to see what you saw maybe in Telluride or will see in Toronto?
It's interesting. You know, every film festival is so kind of has its different flavor. Telluride is most of the, they're kind of touted as being they select films that will ultimately win Academy Awards. That's not kind of their premise and what they set out to do, but that's ultimately what they end up doing. So a lot of the films that I've seen or that I saw this past weekend have already been picked up for distribution. So they'll be out in theaters like next month. So a lot of those films, it's a fairly quick turnaround, which is exciting. So you kind of just get a preview of what's to come. Toronto is a little bit more like Sundance, but kind of a mix. There's some commercial releases, some smaller indie films. Some of those films, like I saw Tuner there last year, didn't come out for months, you know, almost a year later. So it's kind of a mix. Toronto's a little bit more like you'd expect at Sundance, that you might see some in the next couple of months, but others it could be a year or more. And then they also have a whole Canadian track, an Indigenous track, and lots more international films than typically you see in the States at film festivals and down in this part of North America.
Okay, any highlights from Telluride you want to share?
Wild Horse 9 was amazing. Just that was the last film that I saw, so it's kind of stuck in my head. But Sam Rockwell, John Malkovich, just an amazing, just one of those films that's so unexpected and irreverent. It's about two CIA agents who are in Chile, part of the disruption of the government there when Pinochet came to power. But just kind of a commentary on that, but also just a very clever kind of road journey with two friends. Elsinore, which is a new film with Andrew Scott, which is about the actor who was in Chariots of Fire, who ended up dying of AIDS, and his last performance was playing Hamlet at the National Theatre in London. And it's basically a story about that. And Andrew Scott is amazing. And we've seen a couple of films this year, the past couple of years, about Hamlet. But just, it's still, Shakespeare always delivers. He's, an enduring legacy there. And then lots of other ones that were fun. Some, you know, I mean, it's always kind of a mixed bag. Some I liked more than others. But, I mean, it's always a fantastic pick and just a fun way to enjoy film with other people that love cinema. So it's a great weekend.
So when planning your film festival schedule, do you kind of focus on films you think the Park City community will enjoy, or do you just try to get a overview?
Well, it's funny, the best advice I think I have received was the former head of the Cleveland Film Festival, and he said, program for your audience. Like, we know them well. What's beautiful about when he said that, when I was kind of thinking, reflecting on what that meant, was that our Park City audience is so expansive, right? We have people from, you know, I'm a transplant from New York. We have people who grew up in Europe, people who are 10th generation Utahn. You know, I mean, it's like we're such an eclectic mix of people here. And because we've been the home of the Sundance Film Festival for so many decades, we have a very sophisticated taste for film and kind of what we like and, you know, wanting to be, you know, inspired, provoked, pushed a little bit, you know, maybe not too far. Sometimes some of those midnight films were a little edgy, but really thinking about kind of what our community enjoys. And we do that, you know, we've been doing that for, this is our 32nd season. We've been doing that for a long time. So I think we have a good sense of what that's like and just how that, we've always brought in people from outside into our films. 30% of our audience is not from Summit County. So programming for this audience in a way also means programming for a diverse community of people that come visit here, that live here, you know, second homeowners, all of that. So yes, it's specific to our community, but having said that, our community is not, you know, is quite unique, I think, in how, in its makeup and how it receives films and really connects with them. So, you know, it's hard to imagine, you know, the other side of it, if you're trying to imagine who's going to come and trying to guess what that audience might be, that would be almost an impossible task. So I think really trying to stick to what we know has been certainly our guiding light with this particular festival. But having said that, it's a very eclectic mix of the films that we've been selecting, so that someone could imagine going to a film at 10 in the morning on a Saturday and then maybe going on a hike and having lunch and maybe catching the evening film, but it would be a completely different experience. And so not getting locked into a theme, which might be more challenging for people to appreciate different films throughout the weekend.
Okay, let's take a look at what you got coming up.
Yes. So we're back in action. We took a couple weeks off, took a little bit of a break for the holiday, but it's been fun to see how many people came out this summer. We had a great success with America the Beautiful and then Midnight in Park City. And, you know, I think summer's probably going to be we're going to stick with that with our programming. So it was fun to see the response to that. But we're back this weekend with a film called The Cycle of Love. And this is a documentary about a 23-year-old street artist from Delhi who takes off on a 6,000-mile journey on a secondhand bike to reunite with his true love. It is deeply moving, just such a beautiful film. It premiered at Telluride last year. Just one of those films that is so, just kind of a, you know, diamond in the rough, that, you know, easy to look over because it's so small, but absolutely a film that will just touch your heart. So excited to start off our season with that film. Then we have The Marching Band, which is a French comedy about two brothers who were separated in their infancy and are reunited unexpectedly as adults. Their shared love of music transcends their initial distrust of each other and creates a compelling story about the power of family. And then we're bringing back our Made in Utah film series. We try to do two programs each year in this series, and we're doing the mid-length series on September 24th, which is a Thursday. And this is a showcase of three medium-length films made by Utah filmmakers. We'll have Fire Tender, which is about a Yurok knowledge keeper who seeks to return fire to the land. Comfort Food, which is about a clash of cultures between a mother and daughter-in-law. And then The Book of George, a portrait of photographer George Mackenzie Jr. We'll have all of the filmmakers on site for Q&As and a panel discussion. And then we'll have a filmmaker lounge so that audience members and fellow creatives can mix and mingle and hopefully make some connections to make future films. So that's always the joy of the Made in Utah Film program. Then we are super excited about Tony, the biopic about Anthony Bourdain's Summer in Provincetown at the start of his career. Just such a beautiful tribute to an amazing human being. And then we round it all out before I speak with you next with Bad Apples. This is a film I saw at Toronto last year, and just as we said earlier, it took a while for it to hit the screens. But this is the new film from Saoirse Ronan about a primary school teacher who takes drastic action to control a disruptive student and goes down a path that she can't easily unwind. A little different look at Saoirse Ronan, but just she's such an exceptional actor. She totally delivers, as she always does. So just kind of a fun mix of films. Great to be back. And as you know, we're rolling up into our film festival at the end of October, just, you know, reminding people how much they love independent film and how exciting it is to be together in that community setting.
Okay, how are ticket sales going for that?
Ticket sales are going really well, actually. Thank you for asking. We sold out of our passes within the first week. We're about 50% sold for most of our tickets, most of the films. So they are going quickly. Again, it's October 23rd through 25th. So that second to last weekend in October, it'll be Friday through Sunday nights. We're announcing panel discussions next week, so tickets will go on sale to those. If you have a pass, you can register for them. And there will be very limited tickets to those. We only have 75 seats available for the panels versus 424 at our theater. So if you would like to join us at the inaugural Park City Film Festival, and we hope that you will, please check out parkcityfilm.org. You can click on the festival tab, or you can go directly to it at parkcityfilmfest.org as well. I just want to thank, you know, our sponsors. We've had a great response from the community. Initial sponsors, certainly from the Chamber and Summit County Rapid Restaurant Tax Grants, but just so many businesses and individuals in the town and kind of in the local environment who've just reached out and said, how can we help? We're super excited that you're bringing a new festival to town, and just kind of reminding us how much, you know, just that magic of coming together in a community setting and just to get to celebrate some of the best films of the year that maybe you won't get to see in a theater, depending on how distribution goes, because it's such an interesting mix. But yeah, it's really exciting. So it'll be fun to see who shows up and, you know, what's to come for the future. This is year one and certainly lots of room to grow, but it's been a fun experiment just talking to people at film festivals and seeing what other people have done and what we can learn from. So just want to, again, thank everyone for their support and invite everyone to join us at the end of October.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty impressed that you've done so well for the inaugural film festival.
Well, yeah. It's been fun. I mean, it's just all eyes on Park City. You know, yeah. Everyone's wondering, like, what's going to happen after Sundance? And, you know, Sundance still exists. They will be in Boulder, and I hope they are wonderfully successful, and I will be there cheering them on from my seat. But, you know, I think our community, as I said, when you asked who we're programming for, it's the 55,000 people that would go to Sundance that lived here in the state of Utah who were like, we love independent film. We love that unique aspect of coming together and being exposed to new ideas and new perspectives and having those conversations and kind of, you know, getting back to the roots of what Robert Redford set out to create, of just bringing creatives and audiences together. And it's such a unique experience. Telluride does that very well. And it's been fun, again, to go to other festivals and see kind of what flavor they bring to it, but just creating that opportunity to just kind of take a moment, right? Like, remove ourselves from our regular lives, get off your device, and just connect in a completely unique way. It's really fun to reimagine that for our community and, you know, not really start over, but start something new, right? 2026 is very different than 1980s when the U.S. Film and Video Festival started. So we've got a lot of opportunity and room to grow, for sure. But no, it's been fantastically yeah, it's been fantastic to see the response so far. So
okay,
curious about that.
All right, Katie, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Well, Midway pared back the area where nightly rentals are permitted. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has details on that decision.
Fewer Midway homes are eligible for short-term rentals after a Tuesday decision that council members say will promote a stronger community of full-time residents. Nightly rental properties are only allowed in a zone called the Transient Rental Overlay District, or TROD. With a vote Tuesday, the Midway City Council retracted the borders of its nightly rental zone, meaning dozens of properties are no longer eligible for short-term stays. Councilmember Andrew Osborne said the move reflects how Midway has evolved over the years.
I'm totally on board and could be fine with it being eliminated from our city in effort to double down on people who live here every night, every day, not people coming and going. If they want to come and see what it's like to live here, then stay at one of our beautiful resorts.
Residents had a mix of perspectives on the change, with most commenters critiquing rental properties. Jody and Agnes says she doesn't want short-term rentals to compromise her close-knit neighborhood.
At the end of the day, we're raising children on the street, and there are a lot of kids on that street. And I think that's important, and I think that the sense of community, the reason why we moved here to Midway, is because it's a small town, and it's a community.
On the other hand, Jackson Heron said he's benefited from short-term rentals.
It helps people who are in between long-term housing, who need housing at affordable rates. It introduces people to the community. It extends opportunities for those that want to stay and contribute to the local economy.
The areas removed from the nightly rental zone are Turnberry and Turnberry Woods, Midway Village, Rising Ranch, and a few other specific areas. For detailed information about the affected regions, visit kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Park City's Chamber of Commerce says that local businesses banded together during a year of national challenges and low snow. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the chamber now working on plans to help businesses navigate changing visitor needs.
The Park City Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau held its annual meeting Thursday. President and CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff said the past year was tough for the over 1,000 Summit County businesses it represents. The 2025 to 2026 winter season saw a record low snowpack that led to fewer visits and a drop in Park City sales tax revenue. March was down $1.4 million, or about 20%, compared to 2025. On top of the lackluster winter, the community faced national economic headwinds, including rising energy costs, as well as declining international travel and consumer spending. But Wesselhoff said Park City and Summit County navigated the challenges through collaboration.
We united. We supported each other. We promoted each other. And we navigated the uncertainty together.
Though tourism-related activity waned, Wesselhoff said the community bounced back thanks to the Sundance Film Festival, Kimball Arts Festival, Form Fest, and the Chef's Table Festival. She also sees encouraging signs for the coming year. Season 2 of the Paramount series Marshals will shoot again in Summit and Wasatch counties this year. Sean White's Snow League Halfpipe competition will debut at Park City Mountain this winter, filling the weekend the Sundance Film Festival vacated. The FIS World Cup at Deer Valley Resort and Park City restaurants spotlighted in Michelin's inaugural Southwest Guide will also drive visitation, Wesselhoff said. Still, she said the hospitality industry should be aware of some upcoming pressures, including energy costs and airfare. Wesselhoff said consumers are starting to prioritize personalized, experience-driven trips.
We're looking at shorter booking windows and a growing reliance on travel advisors. And we're seeing a real growth in multi-generational travel, wellness, adventure, culinary, and sports tourism.
To aid the tourism economy, Wesselhoff said the chamber will update its five-year strategic plan to align with Utah's 2034 Olympic priorities. The team will also look into how to add arts, culture, music, culinary, and winter and summer recreation opportunities. The Park City Chamber is a financial supporter of KPCW. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
And a Park City dentist is facing felony and misdemeanor charges for alleged acts of sexual misconduct with a teen girl whom he also accused of supplying illegal drugs to. Court papers filed last week in Summit County's 3rd District Court say the 16-year-old girl came to Park City with 48-year-old Benjamin James Wilson in June. Documents say he allegedly gave her alcohol and drugs, including ecstasy, marijuana, and psychedelic mushrooms at his dental office. Wilson's now facing felony counts of drug distribution and misdemeanors for unlawful sexual contact with a minor, providing a minor with alcohol, and contributing to the delinquency of a minor. The felonies carry up to 15 years in prison and $10,000 in fines. The dentist made his initial appearance in court Friday and is being held in the Summit County Jail. A detention hearing is set for September 9th. Wilson worked at Mountain High Family Dental in Park City. The practice did not immediately return a request for comment.